Today's episode is sponsored by Morgan Stanley. By 2050, there may be 1 billion electric vehicles on the road worldwide, bringing opportunities and challenges to automakers and the supply chain. Under that scenario, as much as 90% of all new vehicle sales would be electric. The effects of this shift would be dramatic for automakers, but they will be far from the only industry disrupted. Read more at morganstanley.com/electric. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Just setting some levels here. So, Pete, tell me, what kind of music do you like listening to there in Idaho?
What kind of music do I like listening to? I like to listen to classic rock. I'm a big fan of Pink Floyd.
Nice.
You know, songs like that. David Gilmour.
Nice. That's Pete Wiersma. He's the president of the Idaho Dairymen's Association. He lives in Buell, and his family has about 1,400 cows, which is a lot of cows.
It's in a rural, very rural area in Idaho, very agricultural area. The corn is just coming up. It's about, it's not quite knee-high yet.
I wanted to talk to Pete because he has a ground-level view of something we're going to be talking about today, how immigration policy is crashing up against some cold, hard economic realities, especially in sectors like construction and agriculture. Pete grew up on a dairy farm, and in case you're wondering what that's like.
My work day consisted of getting up at 12:30 at night, and I milked cows from 12:30 till about 5:30 or 6, and I came in the house and had breakfast and took a nap and got up at 12:30 in the afternoon and milked cows until 5:30 or 6 in the evening, and then had dinner and went to bed and then got up at 12:30 again. And so it's very demanding and it's very rewarding.
And we know it's largely immigrants who pick our food on our table and do a lot of the heavy lifting on farms, but how dependent are Idaho dairy farmers on foreign-born workers?
If I said very dependent, that would be an understatement. Most dairies have more cows than what the family can take care of themselves. They're all family farms. But when you get more than 100, 150 cows, you really need help to take care of them. We are very dependent on the foreign-born workers. It's the engine that makes the machine run.
You might even call it the mother's milk there, I guess, in Idaho. How has the toughening stance on immigration affected you as an employer? Are you finding all the workers you need? Have you had to push wages up? How is the tightening up of the stance on immigration from Washington impacting you as an employer in Idaho?
Well, we've really noticed a drop-off in applicants. Several years ago, you'd have several a week applying for work, and now it's you might get one a month, maybe. I have all the workers I need. We have had to increase wages. I know other dairymen have, too, and that's kind of what you end up doing. You end up almost robbing your neighbor of employees to get your cows milked, and that doesn't really make for that great of neighborly relations. And it's not really overt, but it is kind of what happens. The employees know it, and those who are looking for a little bit better paycheck or a little bit different situation will go, while they're working for you, they'll go up the street and check around and see what the availability is. So we're almost scavenging workers from each other. It's not real bad yet, but if our labor pool dries up, it could get a lot worse.
Yeah, that leads nicely into my next question, which is a lot of people argue that if you pay wages that are high enough, that American-born workers will gladly do these jobs. Is that your experience and the experience of other dairy farmers there?
No, not at all. In the 20 years that I've been dairying here in Idaho, I've probably had four or five native-born Americans apply for jobs, and most of those came from agricultural backgrounds. So it hasn't been my experience that there are people willing, they're not even willing to inquire about the job or about the rate of pay or anything. We just don't get them.
Yeah, that's interesting. So why not just increase milk prices and then you can pay your workers more? I'm guessing there are significant problems with that idea of increasing milk prices. What are they?
Well, the biggest problem is we don't have control over our milk prices. That is market-driven. We produce the milk, we ship it off to the processor, and they more or less tell us at the end of the month what we're going to get paid for it. So it's not a question of us just passing our costs onto the consumer. We have no mechanism to do that.
And I'm going to betray my complete lack of knowledge of the dairy economy and how it works, but how much now in the cow milking process is automated and how much requires human milkers to do this job? How much is automation now?
Automation is starting to really play in because of this issue. I know there are a lot of interest in milking robots, which is not quite what it sounds like. It's actually a milking station that the cow goes to itself, and the milking unit is attached to the cow, and she's milked that way. It's almost like a voluntary system for the cow. It's quite a radical change from how things have been done. But the potential lack of a workforce has really upped the interest in robotic milking and technology in general.
Reminds me that could be a Pink Floyd album, the robot milkers of the world. Talk to me a little bit about, when you're having a beer with other dairy farmers, what are you guys talking about? I mean, obviously Idaho is a pretty red Republican state, but very dependent on agriculture. What is the attitude like towards President Trump and his position on immigration, and particularly the idea that he would want to reduce legal immigration eventually? When you're just getting together with other dairy farmers, how do you guys talk about the president and his policies?
Well, it's a red state, like you said. So, the overall feeling is that Trump is doing a good job. It does make us nervous, his stance on immigration. What really makes us nervous is the lack of progress on the whole immigration issue for the last several years. We really need a system of legal migrant workers to help us in agriculture. It's really the only thing that's going to matter to us. There needs to be a legal, sensible, reasonable system to allow migrant workers to come in and work and not seasonal like the field workers. Dairy workers year-round, and there's no program to supply us with year-round workers. So we really need to fix that portion of it. I know that many people, I think, are of the mistaken notion that it's agriculture's problem, it's not their problem, but if fruit and vegetables stay in the field and the cows don't get milked, in a few days to a few weeks, you will fill it in the grocery store. So it's really an issue, and it's an issue for all of us, not just those of us in agriculture. It's a national issue. National security is really food security, and so if we compromise that, I think we're going to create a big problem.
Pete, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Politico Money. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hope I helped.
We're going to need all kinds of immigrants, the most skilled and even the less skilled, because we're going to have a dearth of workers unless we allow those immigrants into our country and figure out a way to do that legally.
That's Mark Zandi. He's chief economist at Moody's Analytics. I spoke with Mark to pull back the lens a little bit and get a panoramic view on what President Trump's immigration policy might mean for the wider economy. Zero tolerance has hit a speed bump. But Trump continues to push for a border wall and pretty significant curbs on legal immigration, too. We'll also talk about how trade spats play into all of this. Mark, thanks so much for joining us on Politico Money.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, let's pull back the lens a little bit, and you can put on your macroeconomist hat for us. Unemployment rate in the United States is super low at 3.8%, close to two-decade lows. I've even read, tied for a 50-year low. At the same time, President Trump is pursuing aggressive measures to curb legal and illegal immigration. How are we going to see this play out in the United States economy, given that we have a 3.8% unemployment rate?
Well, labor market is very tight. We have a record number of open job positions already, and it's just going to get worse. I think businesses' number one problem, if it isn't already finding qualified workers, it will be soon. And this problem's not going away. It's a problem that's going to be with us for a long time to come. So, a very tight labor market that's only going to get tighter and further constrain the ability of this economy to grow.
And are there particular sectors that would get hit the hardest by this, not being able to find qualified workers? Obviously, dairy farmers we heard from, but where else in the economy are we likely to see the impact if people can't find workers and can't hire as many legal or undocumented immigrants?
Agriculture, for sure. It goes well beyond dairy farmers. So the entire agricultural sector is going to struggle, already is, finding workers. Leisure hospitality, so hotels are having trouble finding workers. Transportation, so truckers are in short supply. Construction, I mean, if the president wants to build his wall between Mexico and the United States, he's going to have to hire Mexicans to do it because there are literally no American construction workers there to do anything other than build the homes that are going up. So those are good examples, but I will say, immigrants are key to the workforce in every industry. So every industry is going to feel it. It's not just one or two. It's pretty much across the board.
All right. Well, let me play devil's advocate for a minute and make the argument that some proponents of more restrictions on immigration make, and that is it could put upward pressure on Americans' wages, that if you just paid people a little bit more, they would take some of these jobs. I think our dairy farmer would disagree with that. But it is the argument that's made that wages have been stagnant for quite a while, and then if we have fewer undocumented immigrants and fewer legal immigrants, employers will be forced to just pay American workers more. Is that wrong?
Well, wage growth is accelerating. It's already going up because that labor market is really tight, and so we are seeing that happen already. And I would expect wage growth to continue to accelerate, but it's not enough. There just aren't enough workers out there. I mean, there are some folks that kind of stepped out of the workforce in the tough times and have had difficulty getting back in, but we've got most of those back to work. There might be a few more out there that could come into the labor market, take those jobs, but they're few and far between. And given the demographics here, I don't think we're going to be able to fill the open positions that we have now, or a year from now, or 5 years from now, even with higher wages. The other thing to consider is, at some point, the higher wages constrain the profitability of companies and the viability of those companies to, produce what they produce, the goods and services that they produce. So, one has to worry about competitiveness as well. So, wages are rising; they'll continue to rise. I think that American workers can look forward to that, but I don't think there's enough able-bodied potential workers out there that are going to come into the workforce now at this point. We've got them working already. And, at some point, the higher wages will make it difficult for businesses to make the return they need to go out and produce the goods and services that that they're in business to produce.
Yeah, so you're not a buyer of this argument that, we do have this big kind of untapped labor force that left the labor market for whatever reason after the Great Recession, hasn't really come back. We have a relatively low and stably low labor force participation rate. If we just get wages ticking up a little bit higher, all of a sudden these folks are going to come flooding back into the market and employers will be able to hire them. I'm getting the sense that you don't think that's the case.
Not true. Not so. There's broader measures of underemployment. So there are measures of the number of part-timers out there that would like to work more hours. There are numbers that reflect the folks that have stepped out of the workforce, not looking for work, therefore not counted as unemployed, but say they would take a job if they could find one that was suitable. Add all of that up, including the straight-up unemployed. We're pretty close to a record low, and it's falling very quickly. So, no, I don't think it's the case that we have this large pool of untapped workers out there. There are a lot of people that are not working, even a larger number of prime-aged people that are not working. But there's lots of reasons for that, everything from they're in school, they're taking care of their parents, they're taking care of children. They're disabled. And of course, we've got other social ills that are very difficult to solve, the opioid crisis being a good example of that. Incarceration rates are up. So those are issues that, you know, we can address and solve, but they're not going to solve our problem next year or the year after. Those are, you know, solutions for the next couple of generations. It's going to take a long time to get those workers back engaged and working.
Right. In the meantime, I want to move on to trade, but I want to stick with immigration and the labor force for just a moment, because there are plenty of conservatives who make the argument that, you know, over the longer term, the U.S. growth rate could be a lot faster if we had a younger, more dynamic workforce. We've got the baby boomers retiring, an aging workforce. We've got, you know, lower fertility rates among the native born, and that really the only way to do that at the moment is to significantly increase legal immigration, to get folks into the economy at a younger age who are having more kids, and create a more robust long-term growth rate. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. I mean, the demographics are clear. The large baby boom cohort is now in their late 50s and 60s. They're retiring en masse, and that's going to continue for the next decade, two decades. So that's inexorable. That's going to happen. The millennial generation, the kids of the boomers, they're largely in the workforce. More will come in, but that big cohort is already in. So you do a little bit of arithmetic, and it's pretty clear that if we don't increase the number of immigrants coming into the country, the growth in the labor force is going to come to a standstill, and it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, for businesses to find the workers that they need. And if they can't find the workers, then growth is going to remain weak. It could even slow. It's only been very recently, in the last year or two, that the economy has kind of found its way back, and we are fully employed. You know, before then, the economy was really struggling. I mean, the Great Recession was devastating. Unemployment got to 10%. Underemployment got to 17-18%. So you had a lot of people that were struggling financially. And in that kind of environment, to say that you want more immigrants, that's pretty tough, right? Because you are competing for jobs. And I think that's part of the story. But here we are, 2018, the unemployment rate is as low as it's been, since the 1960s. It's headed to a place we never have gotten to in peacetime. And the demographics are clear. The boomers are retiring, and we're going to have a huge hole. So I do think the economics of this will change, and the perceptions will change, and that should, I think, hopefully ease the way to substantive policy changes that allow for more immigrants. So if I'm right, then I think that gives you one reason to be somewhat optimistic that certainly not this year, not next year, the year after, but at some point in the not too distant future, we could take a more rational perspective on immigration and get some real substantive reform.
When we come back, I'll ask Mark about the trade disputes that are heating up and where he thinks they'll take us.
And now, a word from a sponsor. A message from Morgan Stanley. By 2050, there may be 1 billion electric vehicles on the road worldwide, or up to 90% of all new vehicle sales. This dramatic shift would bring opportunities and challenges to automakers and the supply chain. Already, automakers have pulled forward plans to aggressively introduce electric vehicles over the next 3 to 5 years, versus 20 to 25 years previously. While they currently control much of the value of the car by designing and producing major components, the shift will require greater supplier content than ever before. Read more at morganstanley.com/electric. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC. Member SIPC.
I think you're right that there's a hangover effect from the Great Recession. It hasn't ebbed back yet, and perhaps it will some when wages go up significantly more and people feel better about the economy and less threatened by the idea of immigration. But all this could get thrown into chaos if we wind up in significant trade wars with Europe and with Canada and with Mexico, and perhaps most importantly with China. A lot of economists now saying that's the biggest risk for the next recession is a trade war. And we've got trade disputes on many fronts. As I mentioned, this week, the administration is expected to implement more trade restrictions on China. You've got the threat of hundreds of billions of dollars in tariffs back and forth between the United States and the Chinese. So talk to me about the impact that these trade wars could have on the United States economy, if they're already having an impact, and what more we might be likely to see.
There's no good that comes out of it. It's just all shades of darkness. I mean, if the tariffs that are being implemented actually come to fruition, if everything that's in train actually is implemented, that's on roughly $100 billion worth of imports into the U.S. each year. That's no big deal in the grand scheme of things. If that's the end of it, that's a tenth of a percent off of GDP in the coming year. If, however, we get all the tariffs that Trump has threatened to impose, now we're talking $800 billion in imports over a year. That hurts. That's real growth. That's about a half a point off of GDP in the coming year. And you can construct recession scenarios. I mean, if the president goes so far as to imposing tariff hikes of 25% on all trade with the Chinese and the Chinese retaliate in kind, I think that would be enough to push us into recession. So, that still seems like a scenario out on the tail of possible outcomes, but clearly we've gone down the rabbit hole here, and it's increasingly hard to know where this all is going to wind up. So those dark scenarios are taking on more resonance, and of course that's one reason why stock investors and others are beginning to take this more seriously.
Well, okay, so I'll play devil's advocate again and take the Peter Navarro side of the argument, Peter Navarro being the senior trade advisor for President Trump and a big fan of tariffs and protectionism to fight back against what he thinks are vastly unfair trade policies in China and Europe and elsewhere. And his grand scheme argument is that we can reshore all of these supply chains. We can make all of these things domestically that we once made, that auto parts can all be made in the U.S. and cars can all be made in the U.S. and we can manufacture all sorts of electronic equipment that we used to manufacture. And that, sure, there's going to be some short-term pain, but the long-term is a reinvigoration of the U.S. manufacturing sector, a lot more high-paying jobs for less well-educated American workers. What is your response to that kind of grand vision of a transformation of the U.S. economy back to the kind of manufacturing economy maybe it was, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago?
Well, it's not going to happen. You can raise tariffs, but you can't control the value of currencies. So, very likely, if we impose these tariffs, the value of the dollar will rise and the value of the euro, the yen, the yuan will decline. And at the end of the day, would that actually mean more manufacturing activity here? Probably not. And what major multinational corporation would actually set up shop here and expand their operations here based on tariffs that the Trump administration put in, thinking what, that those tariffs are going to be in place forever? I mean, exactly how should I think about that? Are these tariffs in place this year, next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I mean, with that kind of uncertainty, why would you make big investments here in the United States, at least ones that matter over a longer period of time? And then you got to ask yourself the question, well, why would we do that? I mean, the rest of the world produces cars, they produce electronics, they produce consumer goods that we consume, agricultural products, but we produce financial services, healthcare services, logistics, sophisticated instruments, materials, and why? That's where the action is, right? That's where the value added and wealth creation is. That's, what we should be focused on. So, it all goes back to comparative advantage. I mean, we should be focused and working on those things that we are on a relative basis best at, and the rest of the world should do what it does best. And by the way, I'll point out, if it's about jobs, manufacturing, if you want to bring manufacturing back, that's a very highly productive industry, but you don't get a lot of jobs out of that. I don't get it. It's not going to happen. It's the economics are such that it's a fool's game. Even more fundamentally than that, why do you want to do this? I mean, do you think this is going to make our population wealthier, a stronger, better economy? The answer is no. But let me say one other thing. Meanwhile, I'm on the roll, on a roll here. I mean, I do agree that the opening up of trade, you know, beginning with NAFTA in the early 90s, extending on to allowing China to enter into the World Trade Organization in the early 2000s, that did create lots of dislocation in the American economy. It cost a lot of jobs, manufacturing jobs. You know, that sucking sound that Ross Perot talked about in the 90s, you know, he was right. There was a sucking sound. But that's over. We've lost those jobs. We've lost the textile, apparel, low-end jobs, and they are not coming back no matter what we do. And here we are. And the one thing that came out of that whole process that really is going to serve us well going forward, if we stick to the script, is that the rest of the world now has grown up in large part because we helped them through this process. I mean, those jobs went to Mexico. Those jobs went to China. Those jobs went to Eastern Europe. They now have big, deep middle classes. They're at a point that they're now starting to consume the things that we produce, you know, the entertainment, the media, the sports, the advertising, the account, all those things that we do really well. No one else does them. We do them. They're on the cusp of buying those things from us because they are now wealthy enough to do it. So here we are. We've suffered the pain from, you know, lifting the rest of the world up. And we're abandoning this strategy just at the point in time when we're going to be the beneficiaries of. And when I say beneficiaries, everybody's going to benefit, not just high-income, wealthy households, but households across the income and wealth distribution. So I think it's particularly dark that we've decided that the Trump administration has decided to change strategies here. Just at the time when we were going to all of us benefit enormously from the strategy that's been in place for decades now.
You made me think of Animal House when you kept on going. I just thought of the moment where he said, forget it, he's rolling, about the Germans bombing Pearl Harbor. Right. You never interrupt a good rant. That's my not that that was a rant. That was all very well articulated economic policy. But just to circle back to the manufacturing question for 1 second, and then I'll come off it and I want to ask you something about productivity. But you mentioned that even if we restore the manufacturing base to the United States, it's not going to add a lot of new jobs because, frankly, these jobs are automated and robotic at this point. So we could open up a bunch of new factories, but we're not going to have a bunch of new workers because a lot of this stuff is automated now in ways that it wasn't, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's the point. Auto plants and chemical facilities and machinery, factories that produce machinery. These are highly mechanized, robotic, employ very few people. So, even if you brought those factories into the U.S. and they stayed, and again, I don't think that's going to happen, but just let's assume you did, you're successful at doing that. I don't think it means a lot of jobs. It's certainly not going to be the source of employment long run for the millions of people who work and live here in the United States.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about productivity for just a second. It's been stubbornly low in the United States, productivity growth for quite some time. And those who argue for, less legal and illegal immigration say that, if we could just harness these advances in AI and technology, that we'll get a lot more productivity out of our existing workforce and job growth and won't need all these immigrants, whether legal or illegal. Could AI and tech make up for lower immigration?
Maybe. It hasn't happened so far. There's no evidence of it. I mean, there's no evidence that productivity growth is picking up, accelerating, taking jobs. If anything, it's just the opposite. Our problem is low productivity, much lower than we actually need to support and to generate the incomes and wealth we need to support our fiscal situation, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, retirement, all those kinds of things. So, it's possible these new technologies come along and generate these enormous productivity gains. But I'd say bring it on. Let's see it. It hasn't happened. The other thing I'd say is this view or this thought that, robots are going to take our jobs has been around from the beginning of time, ever since the Industrial Revolution. So you can go back into every decade and you can read stories, media accounts about these new technologies that are going to wipe out all these jobs. We're going to have this dystopic labor market with all these unemployed people. It never has happened. And just, in fact, the opposite. What happens is these new technologies create new income, new wealth. That income and wealth is spent, and we figure out new ways to spend that money, and that creates all kinds of different kinds of jobs. So, you know, it's never been a problem. Now, is it possible that some of these technologies, AI, machine learning, driverless cars, drones, come on so fast that they do create some dislocations in the labor market and unemployment starts to rise because of that? Yeah, maybe, but there's no evidence of that, and any prudent planner wouldn't count on that. In fact, the prudent planner would look at the demographics. That's the one thing you can forecast with near certainty. We know people are going to age and die. They're going to age, and they're going to retire, and they're going to die. We know this. So that is the best forecast, and that's the forecast we should be focused on.
You know what really scares me about this, Mark Zandi? Robot podcast hosts.
No one is ever going to replace you. Future? I would not worry about that. No, it's just not.
You're making me feel better. Well, you know, I mean, we can also worry about the fact that these drones and driverless cars and AI and robotics will just wipe us all out before any of us have to worry about any of this once they become self-aware. So perhaps we're just missing the real threat here, which is the robot apocalypse.
Yeah, of course, the other thing I'd say, you know, we got a problem here and now. That problem is businesses can't find workers. We know this. I mean, look at any survey. Of businesses, and they'll tell you their number one problem today is finding. It's not taxes, it's not regulation, you know, it's not getting credit. It's, you know, the problem they have is I can't find workers, and it's not just in an industry. It's across the board, and it's every business. So this problem is only going to get worse. So we have to focus on the here and now if we want to see a stronger economy on a consistent basis. You know, not juiced up by deficit finance tax cuts or deficit finance government spending increases, but really sustained long-term economic growth. The best way, the only way to get there anytime in the near future is more immigration. And yeah, I'm all on board with the idea that, you know, we want skilled, educated, the best and the brightest to come here. That, you know, slam dunk. But I would go so far as to argue we're going to need all kinds of immigrants, the most skilled and even the less skilled, because we're going to have a dearth of workers for unless we allow those immigrants into our country and figure out a way to do that legally.
All right. Mark Zandi says, buckle up, America. We'll take his advice, perhaps in our driverless cars. Mark, thank you so much for joining Politico Money.
Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate the opportunity.
And that's a wrap for the Politico Money podcast. Thanks so much to my guests, Pete Wiersma and Mark Zandi. Thanks to my producer, Ruth Morris, and Micaela Rodriguez. Our executive producer is Dave Shaw. If you're liking the show, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us and write a written review. And we'll be back with you next week.